Welcome back to the NBA Outlet Preview Series presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, on all these preview pods, Corey Waldron. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing pretty good, Nick. You know, I'm glad that even though you're a little bit under the weather, you're still making it out for these preview series.
You know, I got to come up for the team, you know, a little bit, not 100%, but I'm still in here. If I'm a little extra nasally, I apologize to the fans, but...
It's your Jordan game. This is your Jordan podcast.
Yeah, my flu game right here, so here we go. But it's actually going to be your team today, number 25, the Indiana Pacers. Before we talk about the ranking, let's talk about the Pacers last season. What did you think about the team? Nate McMillan's first year as head coach, they had a lot of new additions. How do you think it went? I know there was high expectations going into the year.
Let's see. Where do I start? I have so many thoughts on this team. Well, first off, I didn't like Nate McMillan, and it's not entirely his fault. You know, Larry Bird wanted to make a change. You know, he had made the comment that he thinks 3 years is about the time that a head coach starts losing his grasp of the team, so he wanted to get rid of Frank and then go in a different direction. He wanted to, of course, play a smaller ball lineup. He wanted to change the pace, you know, be a more up-tempo team. Not something that Nate McMillan has ever really done in the past. And we saw, you know, McMillan had a lot of questionable coaching decisions throughout the year. The team really didn't flourish down the room. I mean, we're talking about a team that, you know, went 42-40. And, you know, between every win and loss, I mean, for a giant stretch between, I want to say, February and end of the season, it was pretty much like a win-loss, win-loss. This team just never got much momentum until the end of the season.
Yeah, and there was, you know, high expectations adding Thaddeus Young and Jeff Teague and then Al Jefferson on the bench in the offseason, you know, and everybody expected the Pacers to kind of be one of those maybe top five, top six teams in the East and probably, you know, be a little bit closer to 50 wins than 500.
When I was doing the research for the Pacers, a stat that stuck out to me was in the Eastern Conference, the Pacers had the fourth best record at home at 29-12. And to think that they were a 7 seed because they were 13-28 on the road. You know,
yeah, that's an interesting stat right there, because I mean, they played like a good team at home. That's a good home record. And then on the road, they just couldn't perform. You mentioned this on another pod. I watched them lose to my Brooklyn Nets and Barclays in the home opener for the Nets.
Yeah. You know, the thing for me all season, you know, now we'll talk about the biggest loss of this, you know, off season being Paul George. But, you know, this was Paul George's first year to show the Pacers he was a leader. This, you know, coming into the season, he said, you know, I want to be MVP. And there were more than you'd like from your all-star, almost superstar player, where he just didn't look locked in. Like games like against the Brooklyn Nets, like you just mentioned, your star on certain nights like those should dominate a game and should help push your team to a win. And on too many nights, Paul George just looked like another guy on the floor instead of a standout star.
Yeah, that's a good point right there. You know, there was a lot of talk about him saying he wanted to be in the MVP race and be MVP of the league, but, you know, you need to step up as a leader too. And that kind of brings us to the playoffs where they got swept by the Cavs, and there was that situation where he told CJ Miles that he needed to pass the ball back to him in that situation when I think the Pacers were down by two or three at the time and they had the ball and there was a few seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, you know, That was the one – I know he had a lot of backlash for that following that comment. But at the end of the day, and you know, think about any superstar, you know, Kobe, Jordan, you know, even like the greats, Larry Bird, they all got the ball in their hands in closing time like that. You know, and I understand the CJ Miles look wasn't bad, and I know people got on Paul George for the comments, but that's the kind of comments I wanted to hear from Paul George all season.
You wanted to see him be more the aggressor and, you know, take control of this team and kind of lead them. I get what you're saying.
The best player on your team should be an alpha dog. And an alpha dog at a certain point in time has to say comments like he made at the end of the season. And, you know, even though they got swept, you know, that series easily, Nick, easily could have won 6 games.
I agree. The Pacers were really close. They blew that game, and they had a chance to win the other one, like we just said, with the CJ Miles, but they blew, like, what, a big lead in one of the other games. It was, like, 20 or 30 points?
Yeah, they blew game one in Cleveland. It was a close game, and, you know, they lost that buzzer beater by CJ Miles' miss. And then game three, they were up by 25 at halftime. You know, Miles Turner had a huge tomahawk putback dunk on Kevin Love, and the team was clicking, and then second half came around, and LeBron just did what the king does best and took over the game and led the Cavs to a victory.
I actually remember game three pretty well. I saw the Pacers had the lead at halftime, and I was like, you know, I'm going to go grab some McDonald's. So I live in a street where I have street parking. So if I leave, there's a chance I might not get my spot back. So it took me like a good 15 or 20 minutes to get a spot when I came back from McDonald's. Meanwhile, McDonald's is only like 2 minutes away walking wise. So I get back, and then I finally turn the Pacers game back on, and I'm like, holy shit, the Cavs are back in this game after, you know, I thought 25-point lead at halftime, you know, maybe they'll just, you know, sit this one out and just kind of get some rest and look for the rest of the series. But no, they came back. And that obviously is tough to watch as a fan, and it's just tough for the team to win after that.
Yeah, it was one of those games where I was very active on Twitter the first half, and then slowly as the second half progressed, my tweets were, you know, fanning out to the point where I didn't even tweet, I think, the fourth quarter. I just let that one end.
Yeah, that's a definitely a tough situation. But let's talk highlight. What was the highlight of the Pacers season?
The highlight of the Pacers season. Man, there's a couple guys I can give this to. Because, like, Lance Stephenson, when he came, he had a very nice stretch to end the season. But that was, you know, what, 7-8 games. For me, I'm going to say the Paul George dunk on Clint Capella is one of my favorite highlights from the Pacers, like, play-wise this year. And the pull-up jumper he had against Gordon Hayward to beat Utah. But I think the highlight, it's got to be Miles Turner. Because I saw Miles Turner as a, you know, came into the league last year as a 19-year-old. And then, well, you know, his rookie season. His sophomore year at 20, you know, I really saw him take his game to another level. You know, the mid-range jumper, he hasn't become a lockdown jump shot shooter yet. There, and had a guy who's seven foot, he plays fantastic defense. He's athletic. You know, the future is really bright. And just seeing a guy like him progress, like he arguably, like Larry Bird said, he could be one of the greatest Pacers of all time.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I was going to go with Miles Turner, just like you said. He improved his game defensively. He showed it. He's improved his jump shot. He still needs, like you said, to get more consistent. But as a Pacer fan, it kind of gives you something to look forward to. You know, this is a player we can build around, and he does have a lot of potential.
And as a center, you know, we saw him numerous times last season go out to the three-point line and hit three-pointers.
And that's big. That opens up the floor a lot.
Exactly. And the fact that, you know, there are centers in the league that can hit threes. You know, we know that Towns, Jokic, these guys can stretch the floor. And there's not very many of them. I mean, we saw Brook Lopez at it. But we're starting to see centers do it. And I just like the young guys getting onto it earlier. And I just think, you know, if he develops a three-point game, the mid-range pull-up, you know, a couple post moves, I mean.
And he's a good athlete, too, which is, like, another plus for him. And I think the fact, like you said, just getting that jump shot down and starting at a young age, you know, 3 years down the line, he's going to be a lot better jump shooter because he's been putting in the work now.
Without question. Gotta love the young guys.
Yeah, what about disappointment? What do you think? Obviously, you know, we said the season was a little bit of a disappointment from expectations, but player-wise, what do you think was the biggest disappointment?
I mean, do you remember the my prediction last
I do.
Podcast
I do.
Series for the Pacers?
I was trying to be nice.
I said they were going to win the upwards. Yeah, I said they were going to win the upwards of 55 games, I think.
Yeah.
So clearly I know nothing. But disappointment for me, it's a toss-up between Monte Ellis, who, you know, we saw be a shell of himself. You know, it's crazy to think that 3 years ago on Dallas, you know, he was their leading guy next to Dirk. But Al Jefferson, for me, is going to be my biggest disappointment. You know, coming in at three years over $30 million, I thought that was a really player-friendly, team-friendly contract last offseason. And then, man, he just played his way onto the bench. You know, there's bursts where offensively he can still do his thing, but he's just too slow and he's just not quick enough on defense.
Yeah, actually, we had the same pick for this as well. Disappointment. I remember Al Jefferson. I remember talking about him on the preview pod last year, and we were like, you know, this could be a solid bench piece, come and give you some points. But like you said, he just can't move anymore. And defensively, he's such a liability that unless they have a really slow center out there, you can't play him.
It got so bad that Kevin Serafin was playing Al Jefferson's minutes near the end of the season. I mean, not that Kevin Serafin is a bad basketball player, but he's not a very good one. And it just shows that when you have to go to guys like him over a veteran like Al Jefferson, it just kind of shows you what kind of year it's been.
Yeah, I think Jefferson, you know, was kind of just a thing. Minutes were starting to catch up to him. Injuries were starting to catch up to him. He's a big guy, so it's just tough situation. Do you think that's a player that the Pacers maybe would stretch in the future, or do you think they'll just sit out the next 2 years of his contract?
I mean, The one thing I know, he's a great locker room guy. You know, there's I haven't seen one bad thing said or written about him. I know that him and Miles Turner have a fantastic relationship. I know that Miles Turner early on last season was constantly in Al Jefferson's ear. You know, just you know picking his brain and trying to figure out like how he can be a better offensive player. And you know that's something that Al Jefferson is very useful for in this team. You know, even if he's not playing, you know, maybe he only plays like 10 minutes a game, but having a guy who's been around the league, who is still a decently offensive center, you know, he can still teach young guys like Miles Turner a thing or two.
Yeah. Well, you know, especially if the Pacers don't necessarily think they're going to go far in the next few seasons, it's not bad to have a good veteran around to kind of lead these young guys and tell them how to be a true professional. Like you said, Al Jefferson hasn't really had a ton of issues off the court either.
Yeah. And you know, he got 2 years left at $10 million. I mean, it's not good to be paying a guy you're probably not going to play a lot $10 million. But it's like it's not the worst deal for me. Like it's not one I'm like you got to get this contract off the books. And because like realistically, these next 2 years, we're looking at a team that's going to be you know between the 10 and 8 seeds in the conference anyways.
Yeah. So like we said, it's not like an end of the world. It's not like they have money that they need to spend elsewhere. Like they're trying to sign a superstar free agent in the future. Yeah, they can use it. But right now it doesn't really matter. I know this is your squad. So number 25 for the Pacers in this offseason ranking. What are your thoughts on that?
It's fair. It's definitely fair. I think it's a little low personally. I think they're, right around probably, I mean, not much higher, like 22. You know, 23. I think there are a couple teams better than what they are right now. But it's going to be a rough year for the Pacers fans.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe a touch higher, not too much higher. Like they'll still be in the bottom 10, but they do have some guys on here that I think people will just look at it. You know, they lost Paul George, but they did add some other young pieces that aren't necessarily great players, but they are good players.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the transition for the Pacers has always been we don't want to completely tank. We want to get young guys in and, you know, decent veterans so we can remain competitive. You know, some people don't like that kind of rebuilding approach, the let's, you know, fight for an 8 seed until we get good. Or, you know, my inner fan, I do enjoy it to a degree because you never want to watch your team suck. And if your team can do one of these somewhat rebuilds and be competitive and then get good again, which the Pacers have done in the past, I'm not against it.
I think this means, you know, since the Pacers didn't go full rebuild, I think they believe they can build around Miles Turner. If they didn't have Miles Turner, I think it would have made more sense to go for, you know, a high pick and try to get your, you know, star player. But I think they believe that Miles Turner can be that guy.
I mean, there's been no evidence yet to prove anyone else otherwise.
So, well, that we'll see what happens with him and what happens with the rebuild, like you said. It's kind of more convenient as a fan to, like you said, not watch your team suck. But, you know, it could be a longer process of getting good again. Every scenario kind of has its pros and cons. But let's talk about the offseason. Let's talk additions. We'll start with the draft. Number 18th pick, TJ Leaf. What are your thoughts on him?
Oh, I wanted Harry Giles so bad. I was praying they would get Harry Giles. You know, I know Harry Giles has had the knee problems and everything else. I just think if the kid stays healthy, he's going to be a stud. TJ Leaf is... He's that, you know, I feel like I say this every podcast like 47 times, but he fits the new NBA. You know, he's a big guy. Yep. Who can shoot the three. You know, he's defensively, he's not awful. We'll have to see how he does against, you know, NBA players. Because, you know, playing college, you know, you only play against, you know, 4 or 5 really good athletes, you know, on given months. So the talent's not as hard. I do think he has decent upside. You know, time will tell. You know, I worry because, you know, playing with UCLA, he got a lot of very good looks because they had, you know, a decent amount of shooters and they had, you know, Lonzo Ball creating for them. And he doesn't really have that kind of playmaker on the Pacers that can really set him up for those kind of looks. So he might have a lot of growing pains this first year.
Yeah, I think there's going to be probably an adjustment defensively, like you said. You know, that's probably where he'll need to improve, but he does have that 3-point shot. He is a skilled player and he can kind of, like you said, fit with the new NBA. I know the Pacers like his fit next to Miles Turner.
Yeah. You know, at 6'10", I mean, TJ Leaf, not that he doesn't like remind me of Kevin Love particularly, and I don't even want to say it's Kevin Love because they're both white, but he just reminds me a little bit of Kevin Love on the floor. You know, he just does a little bit of the scrappy things a little bit, and he stretches the floor.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, the Pacers hope he can be something like Kevin Love. The Pacers also did have 2 second-round picks, EK Anebugu and Edmund Summers. I don't know if I pronounced his name right, but I know that he was a steal to get, and Summers is coming off a knee injury. What do you like about these guys?
I can't pronounce the first guy's name. he's a project. I can't say his name. Wait, Nick, say his name one more time so I can try and pronounce it.
All right, EK Anebugu.
Okay. That's
right. I'm just making a swing at it.
That's the guy from UCLA as well, right?
Yeah, he was on the first round draft boards for some team. So this was definitely a pick. I remember people mentioning him going a lot higher, and you know, getting him at 47, I think, is not a bad deal. And like you said, he does need to improve. He's kind of a raw prospect, but I think it's pretty good value for the Pacers.
Yeah, he's a scrappy center. You know, he's long, and you know, offensively is where he's going to struggle. But lobs and rebounds and defense is what he'll bring. And Edmund Sumner. Oh my! I was very happy to get him. You know, he's a 6'5" point guard. He's 21 years old, coming out of Xavier. He had a very good year last year. I think, you know, the Pacers haven't had good luck with point guards. You know, Jeff Teague was probably the best point guard they had within 10 years. Not that George Hill wasn't a good point guard, but I've said this numerous times. George Hill was more of a 2 guard than a 1 guard. He's more of a defense and a three and D player than a playmaking point guard, which the Pacers always lacked. And I just think Sumner can bring, you know, if he develops correctly, a different tempo to this Pacers offense.
Yeah, I know some of the OTG draft guys liked him. You know, they were saying like he could be a steal in the second round, so he'll be someone to keep an eye on. But let's talk about signings and trades. I guess we'll start with the big trade. Obviously, Paul George, we've mentioned it, you know, on a million pods. There was a lot of thoughts that he was going to sign with the Lakers next year. So he told the Pacers he didn't plan on re-signing. So they were kind of in a bad situation, lost all leverage. Traded Paul George for Victor Oladipo and Sabonis. And what are your thoughts on that trade? Obviously, it's not great value for Paul George, but can you see the – what do I want to say in this situation? Can you see the bright spots about this trade?
Yes and no. I like Victor Oladipo. But at the same time, I despise the contract. We both know he's vastly overpaid. But at the same time, has Victor Oladipo really got a chance to showcase his skills to the fullest ability? Probably not. You know, playing with the Magic, he was obviously the best player on the team, but there wasn't much around him. So the focus, you know, defensively was generally on him. Shooter, we know. And then last year with the Thunder, you know, you're playing alongside Westbrook, and you know, his numbers went up slightly, even though people for some reason think he didn't show much. His numbers went up. It's just he needs more. You know, with the Pacers, he'll have a higher usage rate for sure, I think, and there's a little bit less pressure because you know this team is rebuilding, and you know now the thought is for me at least that Oladipo and Miles Turner are the centerpiece for the future. So
yeah, I mean,
like
definitely.
That point.
Oladipo, I could see it, like, you know, like you said, the contract's not great, but this is his best chance to get, you know, some freedom offensively to really have an opportunity to showcase his skills and show us that he can get to another level instead of kind of, I think he did improve a little bit last year, but people were expecting a bigger improvement from him.
Yeah, and, you know, not that this, you know, I'm not sure how much this plays into it, but he went to Indiana University as well. He went to IU. So, you know, coming back to Indiana, there is a fan base here for Oladipo. You know,
yeah, I remember him. I remember him coming out of college, and it was definitely a big deal. And people expected him to be better than what he has been so far.
And the one thing that he does bring, though, like this has always been the thing I like about the Pacers. They've always been a defensive minded team first. I know last year they didn't really show that, but you know Oladipo, Miles Turner, defensively is a very nice combination.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Sabonis?
He's a good rebounder. Offensively, you know, he didn't show much last year, but he didn't really have. Again, he wasn't in the greatest of
situations.
You know, to really showcase his kind of skills. Because, you know, think about the midway in the season, they got Taj Gibson, and that cut into his minutes further. You know, Kantar played a lot of minutes at the four at times, too. You know, there was a lot of more proven veterans, KC team, that they went to before Sabonis. But he's a project. And I think, you know, if you split time between him and TJ Leaf, you know, give the rookies each, you know, 20 or 25 minutes a game apiece and just, you know, give them a chance to either fail or grow.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is a good situation for him. Like you said, it's kind of similar to Victor Oladipo where he'll have a bigger opportunity. It'll be easier for him to get shots offensively and work on his game.
And, I mean, you know, and last year, you know, in his 20 minutes that he played, you know, he shot 39% from the field, which, you know, is worrisome. But he shot 32% from three, so it's not like that's a god-awful percentage. But we'll have to see because – you know, he really didn't wow me. So, like, when I saw that trade, you know, this is we are talking about the Paul George trade. So, you know, this was not the best deal. There's just no way I could think that Victor Oladipo and Sabonis with no draft picks was the best possible deal on the table.
Would you have preferred a deal with draft picks?
Yeah. Because, I mean, even though we, you know, earlier I had mentioned that, you know, I'm okay with the quick turnaround rebuild. I'm okay with it, but I do prefer the traditional – get your draft picks, build through the draft, get a young core, and start. I mean, that's why I love what Minnesota has done so much. You know, they built that team from scratch for the most part.
But they had to be bad for a long time, though.
I get, and you know, even the Sixers, you know, the rebuild, and even your Brooklyn Nets. You know, this rebuild hasn't been a quick one. I mean, yes, you guys hurt yourselves with your Billy King trades, but I would have preferred a draft pick, and I still think that Paul George to the Celtics could have happened.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting now knowing that we know Kyrie was traded to Boston for the Brooklyn pick, IT, and Jay Crowder. Would you have accepted the Brooklyn pick and Jay Crowder for Paul George?
I mean, over this deal, yes. Over this deal, yes. But I probably would have still asked for more. I would have asked for at least – I know the untouchable is Terry Rozier, but I would have asked for Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart. I would have wanted to get a guard along with Jay Crowder.
Yeah, definitely interesting situation with the Celtics because it seems like the Celtics would be more willing to give up maybe one of their forwards. They don't want to give up Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, but they would definitely move Crowder, and probably Avery Bradley would have been movable at the time considering they traded him to the Pistons. But
yeah, I think the big issue with that trade was the fact that, you know, Kyrie has already said that he's kind of like down to stay long term. And I don't think they were ever able to get that out of Paul George. Like we said, you know, all those rumors, you know, now the tampering allegations about the Lakers and him. You know, it was hard for any other team to really buy in and to sell on a Paul George. And, you know, the Thunder are the team that took the risk.
Yeah, very true. And yeah, Thunder took the swing because they kind of have a risk with Westbrook too. But that's for another pod. The Pacers also had another trade. They picked up Corey Joseph in a sign and trade with CJ Miles. What are your thoughts on Corey Joseph?
I like it because before, you know, we'll talk about signings in a second. Before they traded for Corey Joseph, they signed Darren Collison, who was with the Pacers a few years ago when they were actually battling the Heat in the conference finals. Oh, no, the semifinals, pardon me. Very offensive player, and Corey Joseph is a more playmaking type of point guard. So I do like that they, you know, they have the best of both worlds in the instance. It doesn't, you know, it's not a wow factor, but you know, CJ Miles, you know, he wasn't going to be anything with the Pacers. You know, he's a guy who deserves a chance to try and win a ring or at least play on a competitive team because that's, you know, he's a knockdown 3-point shooter. He's a solid wing defender. He's able to go to a good system, to a good environment at least.
Yeah, it's a good situation for him because, like, he's not really a player that's going to create his own shot a lot. But like you said, he's going to knock down a three. And playing with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan will get a lot of attention. But talking about Corey Joseph, I thought it was a solid move. You know, he's not an amazing player, but he's still a good player to have off the bench or if you possibly think he might start. And I think it kind of fits the Pacers situation.
Yeah, and one thing I say about CJ Miles, and this is about, you know, CJ Miles is going to be a lot better than DeMar Carroll. That's the one thing I can say about CJ Miles, just watching him play over the years, is, you know, he has his demeanor about him. He's definitely going to affect the culture in Toronto. And I think Corey Joseph to the same degree, you know, being on that championship-winning Spurs team, I think he'll be able to bring, you know, a little bit of that winning mentality to young guys like Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, very true. And even in Toronto, they didn't lose many games when he was there. You know, they were one of the top seeds in the East a lot of the time. So, but like you mentioned, let's talk signings. They had a pretty busy offseason. They picked up Darren Collison, Bojan Bogdanovic, Damian Wilkins. What's your favorite signing? Who do you think will have the biggest impact?
It's tough because I'm actually really not fond of any of these signings to a degree because it's, you know, like, it kind of sucks when you know your team is rebuilding, so they're getting guys just to fill the void. Bogdanovic, though, just as well as I do, I mean, when that guy catches fire, he catches fire. You know, that guy can shoot. You know, you lose CJ Miles and you bring in another shooter who's going to have more of a free reign on the offense because of this rebuilding period. I think Darren Collison is probably going to be my favorite signing. Just because, you know, he was with Indiana before, and I was actually sad to see him go backup point guard because of how offensively driven he is. You know, he's a very offensively minded point guard. Defensively, he isn't. You know, he's not much. Like, don't be looking for Darren Collison to give you much on perimeter defense, but you know, he's scrappy.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Collison signing. I thought it was a good thing. You know, they knew they were going to lose Jeff Teague. Let us get a veteran here who can at least kind of score some points for us. And like you said, he's not going to play lockdown defense for sure. But, you know, he'll at least put up some points for you. You know, he likes to get out and run a little bit. He's a quick player. Bojan, I've seen him play a lot in Brooklyn. He's as streaky as they come. You know, he's a guy, and I've said this before, if he hits his first couple shots, he might drop 20 or 30 on you. If he misses his first couple shots, there's a good chance he's not going to even touch double digits. So it's all streaky and confidence for him. It's crazy, and we mentioned it before, Olympic Bojan is so much better than NBA Bojan. It's just like, why can't you play that way in the NBA? And it's not necessarily just the skill or the way he plays. It's just the aggression he has when he plays in the Olympics.
Yeah, it's we talked about this before. I mean, he was lighting it up. This was the guy who was averaging, like, what, 20 points during that tournament?
Yeah, he was averaging, like, 20-plus, yeah.
Yeah, he was killing it. But like you said, you know, when he catches fire, I remember that Pacers game that the Nets beat the Pacers, actually. I can't remember precisely, but I know he had a decent imprint on that game.
Yeah, he can change the game, and he can hit shots that are contested. He's just a shooter that can get hot, but he can also get real cold.
I think I remember because he was doing it on Paul George. I just kept thinking to myself, like, Paul, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you letting this guy of all people just crush you like this?
But talking about Paul, let's talk about the departures. Obviously, they lost Paul George. Let's get your thoughts on that. Obviously, that one hurts.
Okay, well, let me hold back these tears. turn back the water. No. I have his jersey when he was number 24. It will not be in a fire pit. It will not be burnt. The people burned jerseys. Let me just say, you're ridiculous and foolish.
And disrespectful.
Yeah, you have no business buying an NBA jersey if that's how you feel when players are either forcibly moved or moved for their better interests. But moving on to Paul, he gave the Pacers, I think it's 7 years, 7 or 8 great years, or 5 great years and 2 good years. You know, he came onto the scene, a kid who could barely shoot, was a very defensively minded player underneath Danny Granger, in the face of the franchise within 2 years of him being drafted. We saw him battle LeBron James. I'll never forget a 3 playoffs against Miami Heat where Paul George went at LeBron James, you know, dunking on Birdman, the fourth quarter to tie the game up. I won't forget him being beat by LeBron either at the buzzer to lose game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. But he was a star, and, you know, it's a shame that he couldn't stay, but his time with Indiana was over. You know, he was used to competing at the highest level. The Pacers, as we know, were a 7 seed falling to the wrong side of this. It was time for a change, unfortunately.
Yeah, like you said, the stretch in the Pacers, I think one impressive thing about Paul George, like you mentioned, was how fast he became a good player after he came into the league. It wasn't much that long in the league where he was already the face of the Pacers. And like you said, I won't forget those Heat series, especially like you said, that dunk on Birdman. And he was one of the only players who was willing to go at LeBron and willing to compete with LeBron and actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, when I want to just correct myself. He played 7 years so with the Pacers. I just wanted to declare 7 years. But yeah, you know, just think about those duels. I mean, every time the Pacers and LeBron met up, Paul George and LeBron went at each other. I mean, late last year, there was that – it was either double OT or triple OT, that regular season game between the Pacers and Cavs, like Lance Stephenson's – one of Lance's first games back in the Pacers uniform. And, I mean, that game went to double OT, and that was a game where Paul George had 40-plus, LeBron had – And the, I mean, these guys, and LeBron always brings the best out of the competition. But, you know, when the lights are the brightest, you know, people can say whatever they want. I can say that Paul George doesn't show up at, you know, all the time. But when the game, when the biggest stage is set, Paul George has never not shown up. Every playoff game I've seen him playing, you know, even last year when they played Toronto the year before and they lost in seven, you know, the Pacers should have beat them that year as the seventh seed because Paul George, you know, he's one of the best money time players I've seen, even though, you know, he can show me the clutch stats and he's like 2 for 18 for game winning shots. But the games are only close because the man is playing at such a high level.
Yeah, he's done a lot for the Pacers. And like you said, you know, it's kind of appreciate what he did. The time was kind of up in Indiana. And like you said, he was used to going to Eastern Conference Finals, not getting knocked out in the first round. So another big departure, Jeff Teague. He only had 1 year in Indiana, but like you said, he was one of the better playmaking point guards that they've had in some time.
I loved him. I absolutely love Jeff Teague. You know my opinion on the Patriots point guard situation probably better than most because, you know, of our history. And I've always said, you know, I am a guy who likes attacking point guards. I like point guards that attack and dish out. And Jeff Teague does just that. Last year was his best year averaging assists with 7.8. We're talking about a guy who, you know, his three-point percentage dropped a little bit. But I think he was top five in four-point plays, I believe, or top five in drawing fouls on three-point shots. He was in the upper echelon, you know, only behind James Harden and I think Lou Williams. You know, that's an elite category to be in. And you know he's class. He always played hard. The Minnesota Timberwolves got a steal in Jeff Teague. He's a very good player, and I actually still believe that he's better than Dennis Schroeder. Don't kill me.
I mean, he definitely had a nice season with the Pacers last year. I asked you a few times what you thought about him. You said he was doing good things, and the assist rate was definitely up. But it was just a situation, you know, where the Pacers were looking to rebuild, kind of, or with that quick rebuild and. Jeff Teague probably wants to be in more of a winning situation at this point of his career. And it made sense for both parties, kind of, you know?
Yeah, you know, and he's from Indiana. So, you know, for Indiana fans, you know, you got to see a homegrown player, you know, play at least one season for you. And I'm sure he was happy to be back home. I know that when they first signed, he was living back at home with his parents to start the season. So, that's, you cool. know, yeah, that is cool. So, That was nice. It was a nice year. It was nice to see Jeff T actually be able to see him play a full season because he played all 82 games as well last year.
Yeah, and that's always something too, especially for a player. You know, he's not necessarily the biggest point guard out there, and he is in the lane a lot. So playing 82 games is definitely an accomplishment in itself.
First time his entire career too that he's done that.
Yeah, shout out to him for that. The Pacers also lost a few other guys, Aaron Brooks, Monte Ellis, C.J. Miles, Rodney Stuckey. We talked about C.J. Miles. Who else do you think is going to be a loss, or you don't really care about anybody they lost?
Not really. C.J. Miles, you know, he's probably going to be the biggest role player loss they have. Aaron Brooks defensively is but, you know, he can line it up from time to time. And Monte Ellis, thank you. I mean, I've been calling for this for so long. I'm glad he's gone. Rodney Stuckey, when he's on the floor, you know, that guy plays at 110%. His body's just made of glass, though. So it just doesn't pan out for Stuckey.
Yeah, his ankles, I think, are messed up. It seems like every time I tuned into a Pacer game last year or played him in FanDuel or DraftKings, he would get an ankle sprain. But moving on from departures, let's talk predictions. Let's talk starters. Who do you think is going to be the Pacers starting five opening night?
Opening night, I'm going to say it's going to be Darren Collison, Victor Oladipo, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Thaddeus Young, and Miles Turner.
Yep, no complaints from me. I think that's pretty much a lock. I don't really think it. Do you think it'll change along the year? I don't really see any changes happening.
I do actually, because I still believe that there's a lot of trades to come. I know we're going to talk about front office changes probably. You know, Kevin Pritchard running the show. He's a guy who's very aggressive in making deals, and you know, I'm sure Thaddeus Young could be used better in an actual winning situation. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got moved, and that could open up the door for, like we said, Sabonis or TJ Leaf. I wouldn't be surprised. Glenn Robinson last year, man, he showed some highlights. I mean, the guy won the dunk contest.
Contest?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. The guy balls. You know, he hit a game-winning shot against Atlanta. And, you know, if he progresses, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes Bogdanovich's spot at the small forward.
I definitely could see the Thad Young thing. I think that does make sense. I'm surprised they didn't try to move him a little bit more, especially after they knew that Paul George was going to leave and they lost Jeff Teague. But I will say this about Thad. He doesn't complain when he plays in a bad situation. He's still, you know, a class act guy, and he's a good player to have around the young guys.
Yeah, you know, you would know because of the Brooklyn days. He is a guy who I can say plays at a level. He's just tenacious, man. He just plays with so much heart and grit. I know the end last season, he was battling a bad wrist injury. He sprained his wrist. And the team doctors said, you know, you're done for the, like, you should be done for the season. Like, you need to rest your wrist. And he said, we're battling for a playoff spot. Like, I got to get out there.
Yeah,
he's a team battling for an 8th seed, and this guy's like, I got to play.
He's one dude that there's a loose ball on the floor. He will not be scared to jump for that or die for that. That's one thing you definitely appreciate. He played with that Brooklyn grit when he was on the Nets, and I know you said last year the Pacers, you liked the pickup too because he kind of filled in. I'm happy with the trade they made because I love Caris LeVert. Hopefully he can get the Pacers a draft pick in the future.
I mean, talk up that one more time. I mean, this wrist injury, just for people listening – the guy couldn't shoot. I mean, Nick, he couldn't shoot the ball. That's how bad his wrist hurt. Like, he could only grab rebounds and do layups, and he was still out there battling. You know, Thaddeus Young, hats off to you, man, if you ever tune into this podcast.
You play tough, man. But you want to talk about the front office? We talk about breakout guys. Larry Bird's obviously out there. Kevin Pritchard's in there. You think that's going to mean more trades for the Pacers this year or in the future?
Yes. I don't listen to much front office press conferences. I just never know when they're happening, really. But the Pacers, I kind of obviously keep up on. And when Pritchard had his interview afterwards, a lot of people were saying how, in comparison, you know, Larry Bird didn't like to make trades, like at the deadline and stuff. You know, he could never really pull the trigger. At times, too cautious. Kevin Pritchard is not that guy. You know, I guess numerous times last year, Pritchard would bring deals to Larry Bird, and Larry Bird would say, no, I don't want to make a deal. I don't know what these deals were or who was involved in these deals, but Pritchard seems like a guy who's more aggressive on trying to make winning changes.
He's more willing to take a risk.
We know he did in Portland. Right, and you know, he left Portland in a better state than he got there. So I think the future is bright. Because, you know, at times with GMs, you just got to change it, you know. The direction of the team needs to change at some point in time, you know. And Larry Bird built the Paul George era Pacers. You know, the Paul George era Pacers are done. So, you know, why not get a new voice in there to make the Miles Turner era?
Very true. And, you know, it's not like they did win a championship. They did have some success going to the Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, you do want to get to that championship, that gold trophy. You want to hold that up. But talk
about trophies for fourth place.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't
exactly.
Get fourth place trophies.
Definitely not in the NBA. Maybe in Little League, but let's talk breakout players. Who's your breakout starter this year?
Breakout starter for me has, oh my god. You know who we can talk about on the possible lineup? Lance Stephenson. I don't think he starts, but
I had him as my sixth, you know. That's why I didn't mention him.
Well, there was talks, you know, just to, you know, throw in some the Pacers before they got Corey Joseph and Darren Collison, there was a strong willingness to let Lance be a point guard. And, you know, if they didn't sign these guys, it would have been interesting to see Lance as a point guard. Just want to throw that out there. My breakout
I mean,
starter,
it is probably his best role, though, not to cut you off, because, I mean, his shooting is really inconsistent, but when he's playmaking, it's usually when he has the best, when he has the ball in his hands. That's why I like him off the bench more, because I don't think he does that at a starter-type level. but off the bench in like spurts, I think that works.
I mean, that Pacers team, the year they captured the one seed and lost to the Miami Heat, you know, Lance Stephenson was the two-guard point guard. He was the playmaker that George Hill wasn't at times. So, you know, yeah, I mean, the guy's very good at getting other people involved. Too pass-first aggressive. But, yeah, you know, he can definitely dish the rock out.
But let's get back to the other thing. Who's your breakout starter for the Pacers this year?
All right. I'm going with my man Vic. This is his year, man. With no Paul George, with no Russell Westbrook taking a high usage rate, he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, and he'll have the opportunity to make some things happen. You know, he was balling out in that Africa game or whatever they had going on over there.
Yep, I remember
that. He won MVP. I don't know if you saw any highlights.
I watched the game, actually.
Oh, did you? He looked really good in that game.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't much defense, but he did look, you know, confident.
Yeah. The jump shot looked a lot better than I recall seeing it. You know, I mean, I know he's had stretches. I remember one time against the Thunder when they still had Kevin Durant, he went off for like 36. You know, if he can just get a consistent jump shot, you know, he could be a very big surprise, and he could surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing for him is consistency. But I'm going to go with Miles Turner. I think this situation is going to be great for him. I think at times last year he was almost scared to shoot the ball because he had other good players around him. Now being maybe the best player on this team, you know, he's going to be more aggressive and more willing to take those shots and drive to the rim because he can really attack people.
I am right now fist pumping, and I wanted to yell in agreement with what you just said because I can't believe I didn't mention it earlier. Man, oh, man. You know how many times that guy would pump fake himself out of a wide open jump shot. He was so great at times last season that to shoot that basketball. I can't tell you how many times, top of the key, he would catch it, and instead of just going up strong with a confident jump shot, he'd pump fake until the defender was on him. And I was sitting here with a bunch of the guys that I watched the games with just like, what are you doing, man? And, you know, that's the youth showing. And like you said just now, you know, if he can develop confidence confidence is just so big in the NBA in general. And, you know, not having Paul George, not having Jeff Teague, you know, not having CJ Miles, you know, there's not a lot of scoring options right now besides him and Vic. So, you know, he'll have the opportunity, and he better not pump fake.
Yeah, no, I think that he'll kind of learn, and they'll kind of go over the tape with him and be like, you know, Miles, we want you to kind of expand your game and keep shooting more. You're our guy, so take advantage of the opportunities. But breakout bench guy, who's your breakout bench dude?
I'm going to say it kills me that I can't say Lance because like I think Lance is going to have a really good year. But for me, it's going to be Glenn Robinson III. The kid's been working hard. You know, I follow him on social media. He's been in the gym almost all summer. Talking about the dunk contest champion here, man. I think he could turn some heads and surprise some people.
He will definitely defense. He'll see more minutes too. You know, he'll see a bigger role. Everybody on the Pacers is just going to get the ball a lot more. Not, you know, taking any way of thing against Paul George or Jeff Teague, but they just, you know, are guys that have a ball a lot. They make plays for other players and they shoot a lot. But now that's going to go around to the rest of the team and give some of these young dudes a chance to step up.
And I think what will help Glenn Robinson is to get more minutes than what we just said is the fact that he plays defense. And not that Bogdanovich doesn't play defense.
But no, he doesn't. He doesn't. Don't defend him.
Okay. He's not a good defender. And I think at the end of the day, you know, if you have a lineup out there with Oladipo, Turner, and Glenn Robinson, and Thaddeus Young, defensive lineup you could have.
Yeah, and then Corey Joseph, even at point – you know, that definitely could be some nice defensive situations right there for the Pacers.
Especially for a team that didn't play much defense last year. I mean, they raised their offensive pace, and they also were giving up, you know, more points than the Paul George era Pacers had ever seen.
Yeah, I think that was the big issue last year was, you know, the offense stepped up, but the defense stepped down. But for me, bench guy, I'm going to go with your dude, Lance Stephenson. You know, I think him in Indiana just makes sense. Like, he doesn't work anywhere else but with the Pacers, so I think they'll be able to work some magic on him, and he'll have a solid role off the bench. I could be completely wrong, and he can go AWOL, but I'm just hoping he does good for you.
He is, you know, I know that Pacers Twitter last, when he came back, we were calling it the Lance effect. You know, we're talking about a guy who was being on, you know, five or six different teams as the Pacers, you know, couldn't find a home, looked, you know, when he was at the Hornets, looked god awful.
He was supposed to go, you know, be a big, big player on that team, and he just was terrible.
I thought I remember having writing an article back then for OTG saying that I thought the Hornets were going to be like a four seed that year because of Kemba, Stevenson, and, you know, Jefferson, the pieces they had, and obviously it didn't work. But, you know, Lance came back last year, and he first thing he did was get underneath LeBron James' skin, doing what he always does. I like the attitude. You know, the fight with – I don't know if you saw, but, like, when they went against Toronto of all teams, yep. P.J. Tucker and DeRozan almost fought Lance Stevenson too. He just has that he's – if he's on your team, you absolutely love him. And if he's playing against your team, you can't stand him. And I love players like that.
He definitely gives them a nice little bit of competitiveness, a little edge. And that's something that, you know, a young team can always use, as long as he doesn't go over the top. You know, there's always a fine line, but it seemed like last year he didn't do anything too crazy. It was more of his first stint where he kind of stepped over the top. But last year he seemed a little bit more calmed down.
I can't say this, though. Next year there will be a lot of Lance just dribbling and trying to make his own shot more often than usual without Paul George being there. Because he will feel a sense of, I don't want to say entitlement, but, you know, being a guy who was there when the Pacers were good and being, like, you know, now back, he's probably one of the oldest veterans, you know, from that Pacers team. I think we'll see Lance do a lot of Lance things.
Well, it'll be fun to watch. But let's get to our win prediction. Best case scenario for the Pacers this year.
Best case scenario, I'm not going too high. I'm going to say right around 32 wins is best case scenario.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a low 30s. I'm a little bit higher. I mean, if things all work out and some of these young guys and they just all play with an edge, maybe like low 30s, like 33, 34, that's best case scenario. Worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario for me is going to be, right in the middle 20s, you know, 25, 26. Maybe we see Turner take – I think Turner will be the only sure thing this season. And then besides that, you know, if guys, like we said, don't step up, if we see Lance go back to Charlotte Hornets, Lance, if we see, excuse me, Victor Oladipo not take his game to another level, this team, you know, will sit right there in the bottom of the East.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a possibility of them being bad and real bad. Sorry, Corey. I like a bad team too, so it's not a big deal. You know, I think low mid-20s, you know, 23, 24 wins is worst-case scenario. Maybe they have an injury to Victor Oladipo or Miles Turner. There's not necessarily a whole bunch of playmaking players in this team that you're like, this guy can go out and get me a lot of points tonight. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Turner and Oladipo to really put up points on a nightly basis.
I agree. There's going to be stints where this team is going to look really bad. But, you know, that's any team in a rebuild.
All right. What do you actually expect to happen this season?
What I say was best case scenario? I said 30.
32, five, I think
32,
you said.
32, I said best case, yeah. I don't have I didn't write down my actual prediction because I don't think I have one planned out. I'm going to say 31. 31 and 51 is my prediction.
So I got them right up.
I think their best case scenario is one win better.
I think they're right around 30, you know, around that range, maybe 28, 29, or like you said, 31, 32. There's just a lot of pieces. I think, like we said, offensively, there could be some issues. There's some streaky players. And shooting-wise, they're going to need people to step up and spread the floor. I mean, I know some people expect this team to be real bad. I don't know if they'll be as bad as people expect just because there's a lot of okay players on the team, not a lot of terrible guys on the basketball team.
Well, you know what I look at, you know, I so far for all these predictions, I've had the same MO. I go through the entire schedule and I look and I pretty much just count what games I think they could win and what games I think they're going to lose. You know, the fact of the matter is, being in the Eastern Conference, they're going to play Orlando four times. They're going to play Atlanta four times. They're going to play Chicago four times. They're going to play Philly, Brooklyn four times, the Knicks four times. You know, there's a lot of shitty teams in the East.
And the thing is, too, the other bottom playoff teams, like we're talking, you know, possibly the Hornets, the Pistons, teams that are to compete for the eighth seed, they're not teams that are consistently winning every night. Even like the Miami Heat are a team that, you know, was crazy. They had an ice cold start and then a really hot finish. A lot of these teams, we have no idea and what bad teams are going to beat up on what bad teams, because there's so many in the Eastern Conference that, like, you know, the Hawks might lose every game, or maybe the Hawks might beat some of these other bad teams and really mess things up. So we don't know what's going to happen with all these bad teams. So it's almost really hard to predict the bottom of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, just comparing conferences, there's like five sure playoff teams in the East. You know, Boston, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Toronto, and Washington. And then you look at the West, and, you know, they have most, you know, playoff, like for sure playoff battling teams. You know, the East just has that, doesn't have that that kind of strength to it, which gives a team like the Pacers and, you know, the teams we've mentioned in previous podcasts, you know, the Magic, the Bulls, the Nets and the Hawks. You know, these teams could all surprise you because they have to play so many bad teams throughout the season.
Yeah, it's going to be like whoever really plays, because the talent level is not that much difference between all these lower level teams. It's going to be, you know, who executes, who coaches better, who plays harder on a nightly basis, who brings it every night. So that's
one thing I wanted to say too, is just the fact, you know, for a fan's perspective, you know, watching teams like the Sixers when they were bad play against the Cavs, that game's unwatchable. But the one good thing about having all these teams in a rebuild in the East primarily is the games are more watchable watching two teams in a rebuild play against each other rather than a rebuild versus a contender.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, watching your team play the Golden State Warriors four times is not fun when you're not going to win over 30 games.
So, a little sense of hope.
Yeah, let's go emoji. The truth. Who's your emoji for the Pacers? I have one. I want to hear yours, though.
Okay. For me, it's the grinning face. You know, the eyes are open and he's grinning. Like, not a smile grin, like the concerned grin. Because I'm not sold on whether or not this is the right kind of rebuild. It pans out on player development at this point rather than drafting young players personally. So for me, it's the grinning emoji face.
Yeah, that's a solid one. You know, it's like, am I really buying into this? For me, I'm going to go with just the, you know, the smiley face that has the straight line for the smile. Just because it's like, you know, it's just like kind of emotionless to be like, we lost Paul George. You know, we're going to kind of be competitive, but not really. I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm not happy. I'm definitely not completely sad, but I'm closer to sad than I am happy.
Oh, wait, can I change mine?
Yeah, you can.
All right. It's going to be the one that's laughing, but it has like the sweat mark going down its head.
It's like nervous laughing.
Like, yes. It's like, oh man, like if these players turn out, like I have nothing to worry about, but if not, woof, we're in trouble with a Victor Oladipo contract of $25 million a year.
Yeah, that's a solid one. I mean, that fits the situation. League pass. I know this is your squad, so they're pretty much a 10 for 10 for you. But for the casual fan, where would you rank them?
For a casual fan, I'm going to say you got to be looking right around 2.5 to 3. Miles Turner. Actually, no. I'm going to say 3.5. Because Lance Stephenson and Miles Turner should at least get you to tune into one or two games. Because, you know, Turner can do some things with the ball. And Lance Stephenson, with his antics, you never know what he's going to do.
Lance definitely makes it interesting. And Miles Turner is a guy that I'll keep an eye on. For me, they'll probably be like a 3 out of 10. I mean, there's potential to be a little bit higher. I think offensively there could be some issues on this team, which could make them not really fun to watch. Like you said, there could be some nice defensive lineups, but the shooting probably could be an issue. So 3 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it's right in the 3 range is fair. You know, obviously I'm looking at a 10 out of 10, but.
I mean, you know, you got to be a true fan. All right, this is a tough one for you because this is your squad. So what TV show would you watch over the Pacers? I mean, you'd watch the Pacers over what TV show?
Let's see. This is hard now because I got to pick a show I like.
This is probably the hardest question on the whole entire podcast, every episode. Like, it's not even close.
And for once, I have to pick a show that I actually, like, really, really like for the most part because let's see. What show would I not watch over the Pacers? One of my all-time favorite shows, Mad Men.
Wow. See, I've never really gotten into Mad Men. I've eventually had that kind of saved in my back pocket that I'll watch it one day. But for me, this is a tough decision. You know, this is probably going to take me like 5 minutes, so... What is a show that I kind of like, but this is tough because I'm not really going to watch the Pacers. So no offense, Corey, it's probably going to be a team that I'm not really a huge fan of. I'll go with Better Call Sal. because I never really got into that show. The first two episodes weren't that great for me. I they were just kind of slow, and I was so used to Breaking Bad, so I'll go with that.
You know what's funny? Same thing. I watched the first two episodes of that show, and I just couldn't turn myself into it. And then everyone who I've told that to has said, dude, it gets so good. Like, how could you stop after two episodes? And I'm like, I don't know. It's not the same. There's no Walter.
Yeah, it definitely, especially when, after watching Breaking Bad. If I watched that before Breaking Bad, I'd probably get more into it. Maybe one day, a rainy day, I'll give it a chance. But as of right now, I'll watch the Pacers instead.
You better give Mad Men a chance too, by the way.
I'll give Mad Men. I'll save that. How many seasons does that have?
Seven. It's a long haul at an hour per episode as well.
See, that's what I like. I like investing in a show. I like investing in characters. And then I get really upset when it ends and I'm just like, fuck. But
yeah, it's one of those shows for sure, actually, too. It has that ending where you kind of want more.
Yeah, that's always tough when your TV show ends, especially anything over five seasons. When it's under five seasons, it's not like you're not in as much emotionally invested into the character unless you really like that actor or actress. But, you know, when you're talking five plus, you've watched a lot of these people.
Actually,
for a long time.
I think pretty much any show that I've watched, like throughout, like till the end of it, I've always wished there was one or two more seasons, because like you just never want shows to end.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's some shows that never end, and the only show that I can think of that I've been watching for a long time is Law and Order SVU, but it hasn't been as good as the original first episodes. But
no, man, without Stabler, it ain't the same.
Exactly, Elliot Stabler. And then even when they had Nick on there, I didn't think he was too bad. And then just now, it's just kind of, it's like every episode is based off a current event, and it just kind of gets a little bit annoying. But
I'm glad I don't watch anymore.
But that's enough for today. Thank you, Corey. And as always, thanks everybody for listening.
Adios, fans.